This is a recording of a sermon given at the First Unitarian Church of St. Louis.
The star shining above all, calling and guiding. The fault is not in the star. It is not in our stars, not in the fates or in the powers. The star leads the wise men just as the angels did lead the shepherds to a babe in a manger. It's my theological opinion that Jesus is never purely God. Perhaps closest to God or the best loved of God or perhaps anointed leader chosen by God, but not God exactly. Now, in Hinduism, when the baby Krishna is born, sitting around, his mom sees him, as all moms have seen them, and they can see this look on the face like the baby has just put something in its mouth. She wants to know what's in her baby's mouth, so she runs over and opens up Krishna's mouth, and she's dizzy for a moment because in his mouth are all the galaxies of the universe swirling in immensity in space and time. That's God as a baby, the entire universe within. God is to be born as a child, I assert, then God is born in every child, that every night a child is born is a holy night, as Reverend Sophia Foss put it. Or, as Rabindranath Tagore, the great poet, said, every child comes with a message that God is not yet discouraged of humanity. Yet we get discouraged. I know that sometimes I feel discouraged about humans' ability to break the bonds of hatred and division and selfishness and nearsightedness. I know people who have chosen not to be parents for this very reason. Humanity is bad, the world is bad, and it is not a place for a child to grow up safe. We see the violence, we see the hatred. I hear of the corruption and the cruelty and the injustice, which almost seems to be a norm, the villainy. Young men with machine guns rob a grocery store just across the river, and others threatened by guns in our streets. Criminals at the very highest level of society increasing their earnings every year, and hard-working people earning less and less each year. We begin to see the world as wrong and broken. Police and protesters divided rather than one for justice. And each of us pulled by this feeling that we have to choose sides in a war where everyone loses. And the water is poisoned and the sky muddied and the last of the white rhinos failing and falling. We can each feel discouraged in our own health and our own bodies sometimes begin to seem like enemies. And then a star appears. Or maybe it's not a star. Maybe it's just someone, and the way they speak and they act moves us to think that something new is possible. Maybe we hear some words, and those words go beyond just summoning ideas in our minds and start to echo in our very soul, shaking us, awakening us to new possibilities. Perhaps it's an action. Someone is suddenly generous that we don't expect to be. Someone is kind. We're in a place where we see fear and hatred. I remember back in at the end of August, late in August, when there was all sorts of things going on in West Florissant, and people showed up with hundreds and hundreds of hot dogs, and they were just cooking them for free and giving them out for free to everyone, police and protesters alike, everyone. Trying, and then the next day, people showing up in the morning to just clean the streets. And the people cleaning the streets saying, I wanted to do something that gave me hope. Possibilities, new possibilities. We see a star and we wonder what it means. Remember that story about the doctor? He'd been working late, seeing patients all day. It's late in the winter, getting close to Christmas time, and he's feeling tired. It's very late, so it's getting dark outside. Another mother and her daughter come in, and he asks the mother, "What's the problem?" And she says, "It's my daughter. She's gaining weight. She's got cravings, and all the weight is just centered right here in her belly. She's getting sick most mornings. I'm not sure what's going on." And of course, the doctor looks at Debbie and then turns to the mother as well. He says, "I don't know how to tell you this, but Debbie is pregnant. It's about 4 months along, I would guess." And the mother says, "Pregnant? She can't be. She's never been left alone with any man ever, right, Debbie?" And Debbie said, "I've not even kissed a man." And so the doctor just kind of stands up at that moment, and he runs to the window, and he looks out the window, and he's looking out into the dark, and the mom's looking at him, and she says, "Doctor, what's going on?" And he said, "Well, the last time that anything like this happened, a star appeared in the east and wise men came over the hill, and I'd be darned if I'm going to miss it this time." What does the star promise? What is the possibility? What does it mean, this new child? This moment in Shakespeare's play about Julius Caesar, where Cassius, one of the noblemen, is speaking with his friend Brutus. He's trying to persuade him that in the interests of everyone, in the interests of their nation, they have to take action. They have to stop Julius Caesar from becoming the monarch of Rome. Brutus is torn. He's torn between the love of his friend Caesar and his duty to the Republic. Really, there are two stars, and he doesn't know which one to follow. And Cassius reminds him that Caesar's just a man. He's not a god. He's not any special than anyone else. They're all equal. All men are equal. They were all born equally free, so why should they suddenly have to bow to another one? And they hear these renewed cheers coming up outside. The crowd is rising. And Cassius complains in disgust how little they now seem compared to this colossus of Caesar. And then he says, "Some men are masters of their own fate," but he says, "The fault, dear Brutus, is not in our stars, it's in ourselves that we are underlings." He's saying both that they have to take action to prevent being nothing. And he also insists that it's not fate, not the gods, not the powers, not the stars, nothing else, only their own action that will determine who and what they will be. Cassius is right in a sense. They have to act. The stars cannot compel, the stars cannot determine, and this is a theology of this church, that we all have the power to make choices and that humanity has the power to make choices, and we can make radical choices. We can change things. We can rewrite history. The stars cannot compel and determine. Not even God can determine what we are going to be. What matters is that we choose, but then we must ask what guides our action. Of course, they choose an action which makes them regicides, that initiates a war. But it reminds me that there are always choices, and that we need something to guide us, some sort of bright, true star that sets our moral compass. And so in the story, the star leads us to someone specific, a very particular incarnation of humanity, a hope. Someone has to be an example of how we should live our lives. And so it is the image of Jesus who holds up ideals like loving what is absolutely and ultimately true and good with all your heart and all your mind. For him, this was God, a very personal Father. I've used other words to describe what is ultimately true and good. And he said, don't just love God, love your neighbor as you love yourself, and feed the hungry even when it seems like there's not enough. And he said, forgive no matter how difficult it might be, just as you want to be forgiven whenever you make mistakes, and love your enemies, and trust, These ideals that he lived by and that he held up, that he acted on, they're like stars or like one bright shining star leading us to the possibilities of love in our lives becoming more true, more real, more powerful. And the conflicts between human beings, one group and another, the seeker, they feel so alone. So we must find community with the others. Not just light one candle in the darkness of our own small lives, but share that light with others. That is why we gather on this evening, to remind ourselves that we are not struggling for justice on our own. And that tension between good and evil, as we feel it, we know that evil does not have the last word. We seek to find the meaning of life and the nature of existence in sharing the possibilities. We hear of someone giving generously. Over in Kansas City, I love that image of the man with a lot of money who gave $100 bills to police officers. And the police officers would pull people over, and they had videos of it. People was very anxious, very upset, very threatened. And then they started to complain about being pulled over for no reason at all. And the police officer said, "Well, yes, but I'm on behalf of Secret Santa, I'm giving you $100. And sometimes these people would just break into tears because they were so tense, so afraid, so worried. And then love, generosity, kindness, unexpected and unearned, just comes out of the sky, out of nowhere, out of the place they least expected it. Powerful, powerful image. Whether it's in a manger or in a police car, the idea that love and kindness and generosity comes into the world is in the story of this evening. And so it was that we have. So it is that we have this star, this image of a life of goodness and love and hope and possibility, and it awakens in the lights that we light tonight. And the hope that each of our lives could shine just as brightly if only we would make the right choices. And knowing that we may not make all the right choices, but that we can, over and over, try again to light the light in the darkness. As a civil rights leader, the great theologian of the 20th century, Howard Thurman, put it, he said, "When the song of the angels is stilled, when the star in the sky is gone, when the kings and princes are home and the shepherds are back with the flock, then the work of Christmas begins. To find the lost, to heal the broken, to feed the hungry, to release the prisoner, to rebuild the nations, to bring peace among brothers, to make music in the heart."
You have been listening to a sermon recorded at the First Unitarian Church of St. Louis.